Welcome to HackerRank Radio, the nexus of technology leadership and innovative tech hiring place. This is your host, Adil Bandukwala, and in today's episode, we delve into EY's pioneering techniques in optimizing tech hiring. We'll explore the intricate challenges of identifying skill-aligned talent, the cutting-edge tech EY employees, and their approach to customizing their tech hiring play. I'm delighted to introduce our distinguished guests. First, we have Tanu Garg, a luminary in risk and regulatory reporting. Boasting with over 14 plus years of experience, Tanu has adeptly spearheaded numerous projects in regulatory reporting across major banks and financial institutions, adhering to both US and UK regulatory frameworks. Her illustrious career includes pivotal roles at Barclays and Genpact, culminating in her current position as executive director at EY. Tanu, welcome to HackerRank Radio.
Thanks, Adil, for welcoming me. Nice to speak to you today.
Pleasure. Joining Tanu is Thiru Vengadam, a vanguard in the tech and digital arena with a rich professional journey spanning multiple decades. Thiru's expertise is marked by his significant tenures at Citigroup and Bank of America, and he now excels as a partner at EY. As a tech, digital, and GDS leader, Thiru has been instrumental in driving digital transformations. His dedication to tech and fostering innovation is both inspiring and influential. Thiru, super stoked to have you with us.
Thank you, Adil. Really appreciate this. Super excited to be a part of this.
So let's get started with this particular conversation. Here's my first question. With the increasing scope of candidate intake, such as full-time roles, contractors for EY, and new hires for clients, how has EY navigated the complexities of demand fulfillment? It's a question that I couldn't stop thinking about when I was trying to pen this down. So can we get started with that?
Sure. Maybe I could give a first crack on it, Adil. See, firstly, you know, EY, especially in the technology space, is growing very, very fast. Just globally, there is over 75,000 technology professionals. And then our current, you know, growth rate as well is significant in terms of catching up, you know, with some of the large SIs, but also bringing in some of our traditional consulting specialization as well in terms of functional expertise, in terms of, you know, a diverse risk and regulatory background. So I think there is a very unique aspect of how we're growing our technology practice. And second is, part of that is there is a significant startup culture within EY as well that has been one of our traditional journey, you know, through our entire consulting career. So that is also combined. So it's a very exciting time to be a part of technology within EY. And to your question, first, I want to talk a little bit on the skill set diversity before we talk about what we are trying to do, right? And obviously, during the course of the conversation, we can double click on many of those. So skill set diversity, just in digital space alone, if you look at it, there is probably about over 650 plus skills, 100 plus combinations of those skills needed. That's just in digital. And then you have data, and then you have several other aspects of our technology. So there is a very wide portfolio of skills to tackle. And if you look at the combination in terms of how we, you know, onboard people and manage, there's many, many nuances come into play. Even if you look at the just hiring pipeline alone, we have starting with effective skill match that is fit for purpose. So there is a range of things that we need to do and leverage technology, and HackerRank plays a big part of it, as you guys are already aware. So that needs to be done for us to be able to get there faster and get the right nuances captured and be able to ascertain that the right candidates are coming in. Sourcing itself is a large challenge. Today, diverse sourcing opportunities evolve, and we're leveraging technology in a certain way there in terms of making sure that we're getting the right candidates with the attitude and aptitude. Then filtering is a time-intensive activity. What are the different screening techniques that we can follow? And then location is a key thing. There is a very good, interesting mix post-COVID as well, where locations matter, but in a certain way that it's a very nice hybrid element of remote work is blended in. So cross locations, cross industries, how do we manage talent? And then, unique combinations of skills constantly, you know, are in demand for how we hire people. So there is those combinations that we need to work on. And lastly, we also need to be able to, you know, constantly standardize and create a repeatable hiring process at scale. That's also something that we've been putting some time on. So this is all scaled very, very quickly to match the pace at which we're hiring. This is our kind of landscape. And as we delve deep into it, we can touch upon some examples and align.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us, Thiru. You practically talked us down through the entire funnel of how EY kind of approaches. And we went stage by stage and we said, okay, how do you sort, how do you sift, and how do you ensure that you're actually optimizing for the whole hiring process? Let me follow up to that question. You spoke a little bit about skilling. And the follow-up question I'd love to ask, in the context of right skilling, how does one prioritize cross-skilling, upskilling, and even reskilling existing talent? And once you do this, how do you go about deploying these on engagements? So would love a little bit of insight there.
So I think, Adil, when we talk about right skilling, right, we are saying, what is right skilling? First, we'll need to identify these skill gaps within the organization, right? Based on the market demands now and the industry trends, which is a continuous exercise. Say for 6 months, you've created a market demand based on the projects, based on the engagements across the organization. And you have to identify what skill set gaps exist. You'll need to map it back to the internal repository of skill and skill brands that exist, which is very much a dynamic database or repository that is there within the organization. Now, once you identified that skill set gap, then it comes that then every firm has to prepare for cross-skilling, up-skill, or reskill, right? Now, what is cross-skilling? See, in my mind, cross-skilling is moving from one skill set to an adjacent skill set. Say, for example, you are receiving a project, say, to implement an event-driven architecture. So what would you use in terms of, say, RabbitMQ, KafkaMQ, whichever message broker? You need to supplement it with database knowledge, a NoSQL database or a SQL database, whatever, right? MongoDB, Cassandra, or Postgres. Now, in terms of skill set combinations, as Thiru highlighted, there are multiple. And you've assessed what gaps exist in the firm. You have to identify from which skill set you need to move to an adjacent skill set, which is pretty much within the skill family. Say from a RabbitMQ to Kafka, as I mentioned. Or if it is about mobile development, say from a native iOS, native Android, to a React Native cross-platform development, right? So this is how we generally cross-skill individuals, identifying the adjacent skill within the skill family. In terms of upskilling, now say, again, taking an example, right? We have Core Java, we have individuals with Core Java. And how do we upskill them in, say, J2E frameworks, in Hibernate, Spring Boot frameworks? For that, we have laid out certain training programs, Udemy, Coursera courses, certifications that are pretty much carved for individuals based on the personalized learning paths, which are very, very specifically tailored for individual needs. So through these upskilling programs, we try to make sure that the manpower, the workforce, or the professionals are able to upskilling in their journey of learning. When it comes to reskilling, so there's so many advancements in technology. You might want to reskill yourself, say being a data individual to taking a cloud certification. Then in order to do that, obviously there are certain budgets across the organization, certain tie-ups that we have done across the industry for making sure individuals are able to cross-skill, up-skill, and reskill. And of course, HackerRank plays a very big role in all of this for making us do the pre-assessments when individuals have gone through this journey, and helping us with the criteria and assessment results very, very effectively.
Fantastic. Thank you for particularly talking us through the tech stack, Tanu, because I think when you spoke about specific examples like Kafka, right, you're able to actually relate, saying that, hey, this is how I can graduate, let's say, from a particular skill to another skill. So like, how does a front-end guy become a full-stack guy? How does a back-end guy climb the ladder? So on and so forth. So thank you for taking us through that. Can we perhaps double click and go a lot more deeper here? Like, let me comprehend what I'm saying. Given the challenge of effective skill match and the evolving nature of skill combinations, just the sheer number of skill combinations that exist today, like for example, 650 plus skills, 100 plus combinations, how does EY ensure the recruitment process remains fit for purpose? And what role does HackerRank play here, and how does it kind of fit in? We'd love to know.
Let's take a couple of examples just to think through, and then I want to talk a little bit on the process. So when we're saying these skill combinations, what are we really talking about? You know, because this is quite high. So for example, within infrastructure, let's say that is a skill, Hadoop on-prem, Hadoop on cloud, or streaming in memory, there is a whole you know, sequence of skill sets within that. If it is within, let's say, analytics, there is data analytics platforms, there is data science platforms, BI platforms, you know, visualization. So what I'm trying to show here is there are typically, you know, one approach that we follow is cohort-based, saying there is a certain cohort of skills which naturally lend to different project needs, right? So this is just one way of grouping skills when we talk about what is a meaningful way to solve problems. The other thing is more like a front-to-end, you know, like a integration type of thing, like typically full stack. Those are not cohorts, but essentially it's more end-to-end where certain roles are needed or some combination of architecture for tech delivery. So these are all different combinations, right? So for you to be able to manage the way that you want to group your skills, right? So that clarity in terms of mapping it back to cohorts and groups is very, very important. And just like a prompt library or other things, we maintain a library of these cohorts. So straight away, people don't have to reinvent the wheel. People don't have to start something when there's a new requirement from or demand coming in. We're able to quickly check, okay, here's a cohort that probably makes most sense in terms of what to look for and optimize. Because talent's not available exactly to what you want. There is a certain level of trade-off decisions to be made. And the more you have it standardized, it's much easier for you to get started. So that's something that we maintain to start with. But I know HackerRank, some of the new capabilities, you guys have an industry-based view on those things as well. And your skills directory is something, use it a lot, man, I'm telling you. So the skills directory is brilliant and very, very well thought through because that helps validate with our clients in a clear way, right? So it's a little bit of preaching to the choir, but I'm going to tell you what we love about the skills directory there. You guys know it. So the simple dimensions there, when we talk of a role, we need to be talking about roles to skills and skills to assessment model, right? So there is that mapping. Then the other thing is years of experience-based seniority. Are we talking about very senior person, mid-level, whatever? So there is that dimension. And then, which means the maturity of the questions and how we assess will vary. Maturity of matching will vary. And then the last dimension is easy to hard. So for example, for a full stack developer, I don't need to give them hard questions on, let's say, you know, CI/CD, you know, pipeline process or assessment. As long as they're able to, you know, manage pipelines, build their code and be able to deploy and automate certain scripts in a existing CI/CD framework, I'm good enough. I don't need to be for them to be at the same level as a DevSecOps engineer or a platform engineer or a cloud security architect or one of those. So there is a combination of that easy to difficult. So if you look at it, there are three dimensions in there. And we want to be sure that we get to the right sweet spot based on those dimensions. That is exactly how we use HackerRank, you know, per se, right? So if you look at it, number one, when we pick what is a good match, what is it that we need to look for and give JDs, we avoid this cut paste and just circulate around. We're able to calibrate that based on these inputs. Second will be when we are doing skill matching, from, you know, other buyer to this kind of a well-defined granular framework improves your chances of success. And third is for us to objectively show that individuals are able to, you know, meet certain criteria. We design leverage HackerRank. You guys probably know, again, there is a huge amount of questions that we've created. For example, Java developer alone, we may have like 15 to 20 different tests for different nuances that we capture. So then we're able to administer the right one that meets the needs. So this is how we get to the granular thing, nuance, and navigate to your skill combinations effectively.
That is extremely powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Thiru. You know, I couldn't agree more when you spoke about JDs. I think JDs are passe. JDs are like dinosaurs in this era, right?
Because exactly.
It's time everyone moved to a skills-based rubric. And you precisely said how you've done that. And this is like a masterclass where someone in tech is actually saying, this is how EY is leading from the front. It's time for you guys to graduate. Like, sure. 30 years, nothing has changed in JDs, right? But the world has moved forward. And in the last 6 months, like, GPT has gone from, I don't know, 2 to 3 to 3.5 to 4. And now DALL-E is all incorporated into it. There's Midjourney coming from the left. There's so many of these tools that have kind of taken the world by storm. So glad to see EY leading from the front when it comes to moving to a skills-based rubric. And thank you for sharing that insight with us, Thiru.
Appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, when we started, Thiru, you spoke a little bit about the funnel. And I'd love for one of you to talk a little more there, where, you know, with time-intensive nature of filtering through profile, like, you know, Bill Gates wrote this book back in 2000, which was aptly titled Business at the Speed of Thought. But I think that holds true even today, right? Business is changing at the speed of thought. And therefore, while time-sensitive nature of filtering through profiles, what strategies or technologies does EY employ to expedite this hiring process? So would love to understand a little bit from either of you.
I think the first one that is very, very critical is for you to be able to manage your demand pipeline as effective, as proactive as possible. That is crucial because, you know, although we, you know, there's so much technology in play, there's a lot of other things that really expedite unnecessary steps or things where there is inefficiencies are high, you can still make it efficient, but it still makes, there's still premium to a good amount of planning, good amount of control over how your demand's flowing through. So you minimize the number of ad hoc things that you do, and therefore, you know, limit challenges or trade-off considerations for that, right? So step one is for us to be very, very clear and proactive in your people supply chain management about forecasting a demand, about systematically aggregating it, systematically cohorting them really well. So putting a lot of calories on getting that process right is probably the number one thing that we do. So you have a runway and you can operate on it thoughtfully. You can apply more iterations to get your, you know, quality of candidate right. So that is number one. The second thing is, We're now creating, so-called mini academies of sort. So what we're realizing is this, right? The traditional learning methods sometimes are inadequate. For example, we do have partnership with vendor firms who are, you know, creating the mass trainings and so on, which is great. That is useful at a top to a certain level, but it may not bridge exactly to, you know, people clearing client interviews, people solving for narrower problems. So there are things that we need to do beyond the mass trainings and Udemy's of the world. So we've created, you know, so-called academy where it kind of tiers into multi-layers and say, tier one is you need to go through a certain amount of certifications in this, which is prescribed for your type of role. So that's something that we ensure. It includes what is called an EY badges program as well. So those all happen offline before somebody gets into the demand fulfillment pipeline and speak, right? So certain level of minimum skill set is needed. Second thing is we also prescribe custom projects a lot for people to get hands-on experience on real life, and we curate that a lot. For example, if you're doing microservices and you're busy there, let's say you've never been exposed to sidecar patterns and ambassador patterns and so on, then there are projects that we give to people who are already on other projects to get coached on architecture patterns, to get coached on, like, for example, we're spending a lot of time on GenAI, you know, design of experiments. So those are all incremental stuff that we prescribe to make sure our people are ready to get on a demand fulfillment when the time arrives. And then if you look at the process itself, through HackerRank, for example, we have a more independent, for when we share a CV of our candidate, we also attach a HackerRank report with them. So people can just look at that and have more intelligent questions, engaged questions, and then show some of our sandbox projects as well along with it. That gives a completely different level of confidence and minimizes iterative, you know, interview process and everything. So these are all some ways where we try to expedite and get this time-intensive nature of the filtering process, you know, managed better.
That is extremely powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Thiru. You know, I couldn't agree more when you spoke about JDs. I think JDs are passe. JDs are like dinosaurs in this era, right?
Exactly.
Because it's time everyone moved to a skills-based rubric. And you precisely said how you've done that. And this is like a masterclass where someone in tech is actually saying, this is how EY is leading from the front. It's time for you guys to graduate. Like, sure. 30 years, nothing has changed in JDs, right? But the world has moved forward. And in the last 6 months, like, GPT has gone from, I don't know, 2 to 3 to 3.5 to 4. And now DALL-E is all incorporated into it. There's Midjourney coming from the left. There's so many of these tools that have kind of taken the world by storm. So glad to see EY leading from the front when it comes to moving to a skills-based rubric. And thank you for sharing that insight with us, Thiru. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, when we started, Thiru, you spoke a little bit about the funnel. And I'd love for one of you to talk a little more there, where, you know, with time-intensive nature of filtering through profile, like, you know, Bill Gates wrote this book back in 2000, which was aptly titled Business at the Speed of Thought. But I think that holds true even today, right? Business is changing at the speed of thought. And therefore, with time-sensitive nature of filtering through profiles, what strategies or technologies does EY employ to expedite this hiring process? So would love to understand a little bit from either of you.
See, in terms of talent distribution, right, what is the most important is around generating the data-driven insights, right? Extremely important for us to identify where the talent resides. So on the basis of the existing pool of professionals and the corresponding skill set mapping, plus where the open positions are. EVA is a firm with length, which is pretty much a sector-based organization, right? Length and breadth of open requirements that we have based on the client demand. So for example, if you're looking for, say, technology transformation professionals and solution architects or enterprise architects for different platform needs, right? Now, which location do we look at? Do we look at an EY being an organization present at more than 10 locations within India? Where do we look at, right, the talent availability? So it is extremely important that we identify our location strategy, whether we go hire, say, in a Trivandrum Kochi location or a Delhi NCR versus Bangalore, Hyderabad, Calcutta, or Gurgaon, right? What is a location strategy? So we've devised a tier-based strategy, just tier one, tier two, tier three strategy. Obviously, dependent on certain factors, such as role, costing, availability, rate cards, keeping in mind diversity needs, inclusiveness that we pretty much very vocal about and make sure that we're embedding it into the entire recruitment strategy. So we've come up with a location strategy, which translates in the form of, say, campus recruitments or lateral recruitments, recruitments through online training portals, or sorry, online talent platforms, certain professional communities as well, or ex-veterans into defense. Right? We have devised a location strategy on the base of that. And how do we move away from the traditional models of hiring? We also offer the remote working or the hybrid model of hiring as well, right? And then once this strategy is defined, of course, it's very different from pre-COVID era to post-COVID era. So we continue to review and refine the strategy as we go ahead in the process.
Thank you for sharing that, Tanu. So my learning from what you said is that typically when you design a location strategy or a sourcing strategy, you largely focus on talent availability and build that out. But what's fascinating about what you said is you've taken three angles particularly. One is, I think you've taken the angle of what skills you want to hire. Second, you've taken the angle of talent distribution and density, like you spoke about. But third, very interestingly, you've mapped it and aligned it with your business in terms of what those needs are. And based on that, I almost feel like, you know, going back to math class in grade 8, where I was taught sets theory. You know, you had a circle, and then you had another circle, and then you had another circle. And what I'm seeing is the intersection of all those three circles, which is where you've seen business needs, you've seen talent density and distribution, and then you've actually seen the availability of skills and location as well. And then you mapped it at the heart of it. So thank you for sharing that. It's good learning that, you know, there is so much more to what meets the eye when it comes to, you know, location and identifying and sourcing talent pools.
Absolutely.
This is still evolving, exactly, right? So see, our starting objective for that kind of a model is we want to make sure that when we think of talent that we're talking about, you know, who we want, it's not necessarily how many years of experience or what experience you have. It's more about, for example, do you have developer curiosity? Do you have the right attitude? Do you have the right energy to go solve problems? And these are not things that you can just have conversations alone and make full decisions on. You want to be sure that let's unleash them in a space where they're comfortable with, where we want them to be comfortable with, and see what happens, right? And again, underlying all of this is, of course, significant professional integrity as well. It's an unfortunate thing. Sometimes you'll have to put time on validating that as well. But if you leave that part aside, underlying that, those are the type of people that we want to get in. So at least in our headspace, what we want to hire is those type of people and, you know, skill them as needed, cross-train them as needed to launch them into bigger opportunities. But we want them to get in with that kind of right mindset. This is regardless of what level of experience you have. Like, I code actively, and we want to make sure, regardless of the levels involved, people are hands-on in there. So hackathons are a typical way. But the challenge with, you know, hackathon is like sometimes you'll have to like centralize the teams and administer it carefully. So it could become like a straitjacketed situation, you know, depending on whether as an individual, as a participant, whether that cause is connected with you or whether that kind of framework setup is reasonable or not. But we've definitely leveraged hackathon in a certain way. And it's a little bit too used as well as a way of connected. So sometimes, you know, bringing the right people could be a challenge. And unfortunately, it is administered on, you know, times which may or may not be convenient. So there are those challenges that exist. Other times, what we do is part of the hiring itself, as you have conversations, at least for, you know, select type of skills, we give them the space and the freedom, like in a real life development environment. If I'm a developer working on a, you know, a program, nobody's like constantly monitoring and everything. I'm given a deadline. I'm given the freedom to go solve it thoughtfully and provide complete thing. So we give them, for example, like saying, hey, you know what, can you take this and come back in the next 48 hours with a material progress on it and talk to us about your technical considerations and so on. So giving that space and freedom, you know, certain candidates enjoy a lot, and you took to point the point about candidate experience matters a lot is a crucial thing. So they also have that mutual trust, and that kind of evolves. So depending on the levels, role, scale we want to hire, these are some of the things that we try to apply. But the intent is pretty simple. We want to make sure our developers are curious. We want to make sure they have the high energy, you know, the curiosity to learn and think, you know, curiosity to build and aspiration to build. So, you know, these are some of the attempts that we're trying to do.
Sharing that, Tanu. So, my learning from what you said is that typically when you design a location strategy or a sourcing strategy, you largely focus on talent availability and build that out. What's fascinating about what you said is you've taken three angles particularly. One is, I think you've taken the angle of what skills you want to hire. Second, you've taken the angle of talent distribution and density, like you spoke about. But third, very interestingly, you've mapped it and aligned it with your business in terms of what those needs are. And based on that, I almost feel like, you know, going back to math class in grade 8, where I was taught sets theory. You know, you had a circle, and then you had another circle, and then you had another circle. And what I'm seeing is the intersection of all those three circles, which is where you've seen business needs, you've seen talent density and distribution, and then you've actually seen the availability of skills and location as well. And then you mapped it at the heart of it. So thank you for sharing that. It's good learning that, you know, there is so much more to what meets the eye when it comes to, you know, location and identifying and sourcing talent pools.
Absolutely.
This is still evolving, exactly, right? So see, our starting objective for that kind of a model is we want to make sure that when we think of talent that we're talking about, you know, who we want, it's not necessarily how many years of experience or what experience you have. It's more about, for example, do you have developer curiosity? Do you have the right attitude? Do you have the right energy to go solve problems? And these are not things that you can just have conversations alone and make full decisions on. You want to be sure that let's unleash them in a space where they're comfortable with, where we want them to be comfortable with, and see what happens, right? And again, underlying all of this is, of course, significant professional integrity as well. It's an unfortunate thing. Sometimes you'll have to put time on validating that as well. But if you leave that part aside, underlying that, those are the type of people that we want to get in. So at least in our headspace, what we want to hire is those type of people and, you know, skill them as needed, cross-train them as needed to launch them into bigger opportunities. But we want them to get in with that kind of right mindset. This is regardless of what level of experience you have. Like, I code actively, and we want to make sure, regardless of the levels involved, people are hands-on in there. So hackathons are a typical way. But the challenge with, you know, hackathon is like sometimes you'll have to like centralize the teams and administer it carefully. So it could become like a straitjacketed situation, you know, depending on whether as an individual, as a participant, whether that cause is connected with you or whether that kind of framework setup is reasonable or not. But we've definitely leveraged hackathon in a certain way. And it's a little bit too used as well as a way of connected. So sometimes, you know, bringing the right people could be a challenge. And unfortunately, it is administered on, you know, times which may or may not be convenient. So there are those challenges that exist. Other times, what we do is part of the hiring itself, as you have conversations, at least for, you know, select type of skills, we give them the space and the freedom, like in a real life development environment. If I'm a developer working on a, you know, a program, nobody's like constantly monitoring and everything. I'm given a deadline. I'm given the freedom to go solve it thoughtfully and provide complete thing. So we give them, for example, like saying, hey, you know what, can you take this and come back in the next 48 hours with a material progress on it and talk to us about technical considerations and so on. So giving that space and freedom, you know, certain candidates enjoy a lot, and you took to point the point about candidate experience matters a lot is a crucial thing. So they also have that mutual trust, and that kind of evolves. So depending on the levels, role, scale we want to hire, these are some of the things that we try to apply. But the intent is pretty simple. We want to make sure our developers are curious. We want to make sure they have the high energy, you know, the curiosity to learn and think, you know, curiosity to build and aspiration to build. So, you know, these are some of the attempts that we're trying to do.
Wow, that's just so much to process, and there's so much to do. Every day, you know, you come up with a new AI tool, and I'm like, man, this is just blowing my mind. And next day, there's something exactly. that does it even better. I'm like, what? I just picked that up even yesterday, better, yeah. And here there's something that's doing 10x better, right? So the speed and velocity, like you spoke about, and the applications, particularly in areas like the metaverse, which is dwindling up and down, but there's so much that can happen in that space. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about how does one streamline and optimize hiring process, or rather, how does a streamlined and optimized hiring process contribute to EY's overall success? Keen to understand, has HackRank played a role in it? If so, can you share specific metrics or data points to illustrate the impact created so that our developers, TA practitioners, hiring managers who've tuned in worldwide could learn a thing or two?
See, as I mentioned earlier, right, EY is a sector-based organization, right? At any point of time, with the inflow of pursuits, client projects, opportunities that we're tracking, it is more than 4,000, 5,000 positions that have been open at any given point of time, right? Of course, based on the market dynamics and market forces. So how do we cater to these requests, right? We really need a streamlined and an optimized process, as you clearly highlighted. How do we ensure that there's a faster talent acquisition in the market to be able to meet this demand along with the existing candidates or the existing pool of professionals? So how do we cater this? There's a very interesting example I'd like to quote here, right? Almost 1.5, 2 years back, just pre-COVID era, or maybe 2.5 years back, pre-COVID era. See, as our part of the effort to hire right within EY, we ideated and designed the concept of a referral league. Now, the idea was that if you have, say, around 20 to 30,000 professionals within, then if each individual provides one resume, then we can leverage the power of plain referrals to generate the value for the firm. So imagine 30,000 people playing in the league, provides one resume each. You get 30,000 resumes from their network of family, friends, and colleagues, right, from within their community. Now, how do we ensure that we are able to funnel these 30,000 resumes, match them to the 5,000 or 4,000, 5,000 requirements that are open at any given point of time based on the skill set? I think this is one idea, or this is one league we played twice within EY. But of course, we have leveraged the various communities to make sure that we are able to offer to at least 4,500 plus candidates in two versions. Now, HackerRank absolutely played a very big role, right? These leagues are from around 2-2.5 months, and there's some time to close the process, which is pretty much gamified and points-based, right? HackerRank played a very, very important role. Now, imagine 30,000 resumes. We made sure that whoever is able to pass through the filtering at first level, in the pre-screening by the team leads or by the roles identified based on skill set, then they had to go through the HackerRank test. All of them went through the HackerRank tests based on skill sets that were pre-created. And it helped us filter out or filter in the candidates based on the preset scores, right? So HackerRank has definitely helped a lot in fast-tracking the process, making sure we are identifying right candidates, at least in the pre-assessment stage, and when they move to the final interview rounds. It also helps in improving the candidate experience to a big extent, right? When we used HackerRank pretty much into the process. And of course, the internal application that we've built in. I think HackerRank, since you asked this question, I'd like to elaborate. There are three different ways, the way we use it in our hiring process, right? Number one, pretty much based on the demand that we receive from various projects, right? We create the tests as per the skill set combinations, which are rolled out to the individuals internally and of course for the external hiring as well. Second is pretty much for the external hiring, where we know the demand we have to meet from the market and we have a skill set gap within the firm. And third is for the internal assessments. Now, we talked, Tirut or I talked about constant upskilling need, right? Now, how do you upskill? How do you assess people have really upskilled after you have put in a lot of trainings, certifications, badges that they've gone through? So we make sure that HackerRank assessments are created, curated as per these skill sets and introduced into the process for the teams to take, making sure that the personalized learning paths that have been created for them, there is definitely a milestone journey and they're able to pass those tests. And HackerRank is a right place for doing all of that. So pretty much closing this question by the mantra that hire right, we generally believe in hiring right, retaining strong and upskilling smart. And HackerRank has been the part of the process throughout.
So if any of those developers are listening in, if you're curious, if you have high energy and you're willing to learn, go check out EY. They're hiring folks like you. About time you can go ahead and apply, right? Tiru and Tanu both are hiring. There's so much you can learn. And what's fascinating to me, and maybe Tiru didn't realize when he said this, is he's coding even today. How awesome is that, right? And Tiru, I'd just like to have a follow-up question there. One, what do you code on? What languages and what's the tech stack that you're most familiar with, just for our audience to kind of get to know you better? And secondly, where does your learning come from? And I'm asking you this because I have two boys. The elder one is 11. A couple of years back when he was 9, he introduced me to Discord. And ever since, I have never gotten off Discord. Now, both of us don't communicate on WhatsApp, although he's in the other room. He'll ping me on Discord, which is fascinating. And he's introduced me to some fascinatingly cool stuff. So what I'm curious about is, where do you go to score your mojo when it comes to learning and keeping up with tech? And then what's your tech stack and what do you still love to code on?
There are three things, right? First is on my background is in math modeling and engineering. So my tech stacks, you know, C++, Python is when I spent a lot of time. And then prior to that, I had some IT experience as well. So, you know, Java has to be there since it's Java and a lot of the, you know, the DBs. And that's how I started. That's where I spent time on. Most of our engineering work is some form of a Java-based full stack space. So that's where, at least, you know, for me to, you know, if I'm in, you know, participating in engagements and everything, for me to do code reviews and stuff, you need to be actively, you know, in touch and understand latest architecture patterns and be able to apply, right? So that is one space where I enjoy a lot and actively, you know, stay on. The second thing is, especially with Jinai in the last 3 to 4 months, what we are keen on and we're doing a range of experiments is, how do we really, you know, bring for SDLC complete transformations and so on? So, for example, vector embeddings and GenAI, you know, is something that we're combining using GitHub Copilot. Azure OpenAI is doing a lot of things on their own, especially on responsible AI security and other things. So we're putting a lot of experiments on that. And then creating our own prompt library, improving it upon, and then be able to have our own APIs, wrappers on top of, you know, these underlying utilities for us to see if we can build a tool out of it to solve our problems faster. So those are some of the second space where I'm spending time on. Third one is more an aspiration. And I was recently part of an EY's disruptive tech program in Palo Alto, California. Spatial computing was talking about a lot. So they said that, I know, you know, Meta has, you know, the metaverse and, you know, came up and down, but there is still room for, you know, plenty of spatial computing opportunities. So that's a space that I'm trying to, you know, venture into to equip myself and upskill, like Tanu mentioned. Those are some of the things that I'm actively working on.
Wow. That's just so much to process and there's so much to do. Every day, you know, you come up with a new AI tool and I'm like, man, this is just blowing my mind. And next day there's something that does it even better. I'm like, what? I just picked that up yesterday and here there's something that's doing 10x better, right? So the speed and velocity, like you spoke about, and the applications, particularly in areas like the metaverse, which is dwindling up and down, but there's so much that can happen in that space. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about how does one streamline and optimize hiring process, or rather, how does a streamlined and optimized hiring process contribute to EY's overall success? keen to understand, has HackRank played a role in it? If so, can you share specific metrics or data points to illustrate the impact created so that our developers, PA practitioners, hiring managers you've tuned in worldwide could learn a thing or two?
See, as I mentioned earlier, right, EY is a sector-based organization, right? At any point of time with the inflow of pursuits, client projects, opportunities that we're tracking, it is more than 4,000, 5,000 positions that have been open at any given point of time, right? Of course, based on the market dynamics and market forces. So how do we cater to these requests, right? We really need a streamlined and an optimized process, as you clearly highlighted. How do we ensure that there's a faster talent acquisition in the market to be able to meet this demand along with the existing candidates or the existing pool of professionals? So how do we cater this? There's a very interesting example I'd like to quote here, right? Almost 1.5, 2 years back, just pre-COVID era, or maybe 2.5 years back, pre-COVID era. See, as our part of the effort to hire right within EY, we ideated and designed the concept of a referral league. Now, the idea was that if you have, say, around 20 to 30,000 professionals within, then if each individual provides one resume, then we can leverage the power of plain referrals to generate the value for the firm. So imagine 30,000 people playing in the league, provides one resume each. You get 30,000 resumes from their network of family, friends, and colleagues, right, from within their community. Now, how do we ensure that we are able to funnel these 30,000 resumes, match them to the 5,000 or 4,000, 5,000 requirements that are open at any given point of time based on the skill set? I think this is one idea, or this is one league we played twice within EY. And of course, we have leveraged the various communities to make sure that we are able to offer to at least 4,500 plus candidates in two versions. Now, HackerRank absolutely played a very big role, right? These leagues are for around 2, 2.5 months, and there's some time to close the process, which is pretty much gamified and points-based, right? HackerRank played a very, very important role. Now, imagine 30,000 resumes. We made sure that whoever is able to pass through the filtering at first level and the pre-screening by the team leads or by the roles identified based on skill set, then they had to go through the HackerRank test. All of them went through the HackerRank tests based on skill sets that were pre-created. And it helped us filter out or filter in the candidates based on the preset scores, right? So HackerRank has definitely helped a lot in fast-tracking the process, making sure we are identifying right candidates, at least in the pre-assessment stage, and when they move to the final interview rounds. It also helps in improving the candidate experience to a big extent, right? When we used HackerRank pretty much into the process. And of course, the internal application that we've built in. I think HackerRank, since you asked this question, I'd like to elaborate. There are three different ways, the way we use it in our hiring process, right? Number one, pretty much based on the demand that we receive from various projects, right? We create the tests as per the skill set combinations, which are rolled out to the individuals internally and of course for the external hiring as well. Second is pretty much for the external hiring, where we know the demand we have to meet from the market and we have a skill set gap within the firm. And third is for the internal assessments. Now, I talked about constant upskilling need, right? Now, how do you upskill? How do you assess people have really upskilled after you have put in a lot of trainings, certifications, badges that they've gone through? So we make sure that HackerRank assessments are created, curated as per the skill sets and introduced into the process for the teams to take, making sure that the personalized learning paths that have been created for them, there is definitely a milestone journey and they're able to pass those tests. And HackerRank is a right place for doing all of that. So pretty much closing this question by the mantra that hire right, we generally believe in hiring right, retaining strong and upskilling smart. And HackerRank has been the part of the process throughout.
You couldn't have scripted that better, right? If you were to summarize that, I mean, three levers, you said it so, so perfectly. So thank you, Tanu, for kind of sharing that. You know, in this whole mantra of hiring right, let's double click on one final question. So given the increasing importance of tech today in all things recruiting, how does EY ensure the hiring process remains personalized and tailored to the individual developer? And I'm asking this question because I was just trying to do some analysis and trying to see in the last 25 years, which are companies that have returned the highest ROI to their investors? And if you look at that, it's been companies that have always put emphasis on two things. One, building technology, and two, hiring great talent. And if you look at that, you will see that companies who have done this, they have delivered phenomenal returns and have always beat market expectations. So question again, given like the importance of tech in recruiting, how does EY really ensure the hiring process remains personalized and tailored to put developer first or tailored to the individual developer?
See, tech in recruitment is absolutely a necessity, right? If you're not following, if you're not doing it, we're pretty much in the old era, old age. See, first level of filtration that we do through CVs, I pretty much said we're using HackerRank. Absolutely a wonderful implementation of HackerRank into the entire assessment process that we've introduced, pretty much through technology, right? Where we are sending them first level of tests, candidates go through the experience, and of course, reduces a lot of cycles when it comes to the recruitment process. See, second is mapping with required skill set. See, identifying the skill set, making sure that you're running it against a repository which is created internally. It is absolutely important. And tech plays a very huge role in making sure that skill set repository is dynamic in nature. In terms of skills, skill set blends that exist, and how are you addressing the proficiency within, right? Where you're tracking the proficiency within the skill repositories as well. Making sure that is dynamic in nature so you can constantly run your skill set demand against your skill set store, basically, or database that you've created within. So definitely tech plays a big role. How do you parse your resumes within, right? Both for internal and external candidates. We're parsing the resumes, we're identifying the keywords. Those keywords help us identifying the primary, secondary, tertiary skills from the CVs itself. Like what travels, what ranks, what relevant experiences. If a person is going to work for a financial services client, what kind of experience that person has, right, across that financial industry or sector, and map it to the requirement criteria or requirement metrics that comes from outside. I think throughout this process, we are trying to personalize it to the individuals, not only internally. When I say individuals, we consider all the internal professionals also, right, since they have to be mapped to the requirements, plus also to the external candidates as well. I'll let Thiru chime in if you have any closing points on this topic specifically. See, tech in recruitment is absolutely a necessity, right? If you're not following, if you're not doing it, we're pretty much in the old era, old age. See, first level of filtration that we do through CVs, I pretty much said we're using HackerRank. Absolutely a wonderful implementation of HackerRank into the entire assessment process that we've introduced, pretty much through technology, right? Where we are sending them first level of tests, candidates go through the experience, and of course, reduces a lot of cycles when it comes to the recruitment process. See, second is mapping with required skill set. See, identifying the skill set, making sure that you're running it against a repository which is created internally. It is absolutely important, and tech plays a very huge role in making sure that skill set repository is dynamic in nature. In terms of skills, skill set blends that exist, and how are you addressing the proficiency within, right? Where you're tracking the proficiency within the skill repositories as well. Making sure that is dynamic in nature so you can constantly run your skill set demand against your skill set store, basically, or database that you've created within. So definitely tech plays a big role. How do you parse your resumes within, right? Both for internal and external candidates. We're parsing the resumes, we're identifying the keywords. Those keywords help us identifying the primary, secondary, tertiary skills from the CVs itself, like what travels, what ranks, what relevant experiences. If a person is going to work for a financial services client, what kind of experience that person has, right, across that financial industry or sector, and map it to the requirement criteria or requirement metrics that comes from outside. I think throughout this process, we are trying to personalize it to the individuals, not only internally. When I say individuals, we consider all the internal professionals also, right? Since they have to be mapped to the requirements, plus also to the external candidates as well. I'll let Thiru chime in if you have any closing points on this topic specifically.
No, I think you covered, right? So the you know, CX, DX, and then candidate X as well, right? So customer experience, client experience, the candidate experience, developer experience, and employee experience. These are like four things that we focus on through a journey. And I think You really covered it well. Just the only point maybe on the personalized thing or experience point of view that continues on after hiring as well. For example, I think sometimes, you know, this is just the construct of the firm that is really helpful. So our global mobility is pretty seamless. So when people come in, they're not really talking about a particular location. At least from my own team, you know, in the past, in the many years, 15 to 20% have traveled around, joined different parts of EY. So there is that seamless one firm, one UI entity that activates career paths in very newer dimensions than the standard one saying, you know, I want to be a developer to, you know, team lead and so on. There is just very different ways to activate. Cross-competency movements is another thing. For example, we've seen people who've come in as a data engineer and then become a full stack or data engineer and moved on to do advanced engineering in a completely different space. So, and then the other thing, which increasingly we're learning, is the corporate responsibility activities that a firm does, there is a huge scope for that to integrate and provide unique candidate and employee experience as it evolves. So for example, you know, we are trying to partner with NGOs where we could go build, you know, if technology or this thing, instead of volunteering time and money, you can volunteer skill and go help them out. For our own connections, employee wellness app, we're trying to see if we can gamify some of those with our own developers and then make it open for our community and so on. So there's a lot of very different ways to activate that experience, to make it more personal. For example, the employee wellness app, our thinking is the more people participate in wellness, they have a choice to contribute to a charity of their choice, which the firm will take care of. So we're trying to build an app for that kind of an experience as well. So those are some of the additional things where the candidate experience continues on further.
You couldn't have scripted that better, right? If you were to summarize that, I mean, three levers, you said it so, so perfectly. So thank you, Tanu, for kind of sharing that. You know, in this whole mantra of hiring right, let's double click on one final question. So given the increasing importance of tech today in all things recruiting, how does EY ensure the hiring process remains personalized and tailored to the individual developer? And I'm asking this question because I was just trying to do some analysis and trying to see in the last 25 years, which are companies that have returned the highest ROI to their investors? And if you look at that, it's been companies that have always put emphasis on two things. One, building technology, and two, hiring great talent. And if you look at that, you will see that companies who have done this, they have delivered phenomenal returns and have always beat market expectations. So question again, given like the importance of tech in recruiting, how does EY really ensure the hiring process remains personalized and tailored to put developer first or tailored to the individual developer?